What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 234 of Two Black Nerds. That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and hot takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on all social media at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that. Love y'all. And let's not forget to mention, we have merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Nerds of Mischief collection, inspired by Loki. We got t-shirts, crew neck city stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the most recent episode of the Marvel Studios animated series, X-Men 97. As usual, we'll recap and discuss the new installment in a spoiler-filled discussion of the major moments that occurred. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this week's podcast with our quick reactions to the brand new trailer for the upcoming Marvel Studios film, Deadpool and Wolverine. So we're only about 90 days away from the release of the highly anticipated Deadpool and Wolverine. It's getting closer and closer every day. Cannot wait for this movie. And now they have given us another trailer, which gives us a little bit more of a peek inside to the story and what the implications for this movie may mean. But of course, I know we were looking forward to this, and we were obviously looking forward to seeing more of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, because they only slightly teased him in that first teaser trailer that dropped a couple of months ago. So let's just dive into it, man, and talk about this trailer. What did you think about this brand new look at Deadpool and Wolverine?
Oh man, we are so back, at least as of right now. Again, the movie still has to come out, things still have to happen, but this trailer I think is exactly what, you know, I needed it to be, and I think hopefully what a lot of other Marvel fans needed it to be. We needed faith that Marvel could come out with something that we could only not only be excited about, but would we could have fun with, that would push the story forward in terms of the MCU. This movie is doing, again, to me, based off this trailer, a lot of heavy lifting for the MCU and things that are to come. Like you said, we didn't get Hugh Jackman in that first early teaser, but Hugh Jackman's all over this trailer. I mean, he opens it, he's literally talking through Wade Wilson, Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool all throughout the trailer. There's so many different callbacks, man, but overall, to put it quite plainly, this is an amazing trailer for Marvel. And I'm really excited for what's to come, because right now, tonally, I mean, they're dropping F-bombs in the they're doing it right as far as I can see so far. It does still have that Deadpool feel to it that I think is so interesting, because they did say they were going to like make it their own thing, but it needed that too. It needed that DNA, that Deadpool DNA in it, to make it make sense for the character and for the way they're going to put pull Wolverine in. They needed a little bit of that. So I'm glad to see it's here. Again, I started to get worried. They were like, oh, it's not as much Deadpool as you think. I'm like, no, this is perfect. This is exactly what I was hoping it would be. So yeah, man, I'm super excited. Tons of characters, a lot to talk about. But yeah, they did the damn thing with the trailer.
This new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine, it's pretty fantastic. And I think from the very get-go, they waste no time at showing us Hugh Jackman. They get right into it, which is something that we all wanted to see. And you can just see this dynamic between him and Ryan Reynolds, which is just pitch perfect. You can tell that they had such a wonderful and fun time making this movie. And there were a lot of jokes that made me laugh. Definitely some things that made me raise my eyebrow and make me wonder, like, oh, where are they going with this story? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all of the stuff that you want to see out of a Deadpool flick, the violence, the language. Which this is going to be a hard rated R movie. They are absolutely sticking to the tone and the spirit of those Deadpool films, which is what we always wanted. And I think Disney, they're showing us like, this is what you expect. We're not shifting gears. We're not changing it up. We are sticking with what works. And overall, that has to restore, I think, a sense of faith in where they're going, especially considering how things have been somewhat challenging with the multiverse. This has the opportunity to get people really, really invested, reinvested, I think, into the story that they're telling moving forward, because all signs point to very large ramifications based on this movie and then, of course, the future projects that come out. But, man, this was wonderful. I love watching it, you know, multiple times just to get excited for it. I will say I expected a wee bit more in terms of the story. They're really holding back.
They are
absolutely playing it close to the vest, which is ultimately, I think, a good thing. I know Sean Levy, he was at CinemaCon a couple of weeks ago. He showed 9 minutes of footage from the movie, and he had talked on stage about how difficult it was to put together those 9 minutes without spoiling stuff, because this movie's just loaded with so many spoilers, Easter eggs, larger ramifications, connections to other movies and characters, perhaps. And so I think all signs point to something that's going to be absolutely fulfilling come July. But let's talk about some of these specific moments. I think one thing that I just want to kind of quickly point out is the tone of it. Of course, we expect Deadpool and that franchise to be hilarious and funny and have all the comedy. But what I noticed in this trailer that I really appreciated was also a sense of seriousness and poignancy at certain moments in the trailer, and sort of a I think a faithfulness to the character of Hugh Jackman and his interpretation of Wolverine, because his character has largely been sort of a tortured soul in most of the depictions that we see him in. And I'm sure that there's multiple variants of Wolverine we'll see in this movie, but the one that we primarily see also feels like another character who's carrying a lot on his shoulders, and so much so that they sort of allude to the fact that he let his universe die or be destroyed or something of that nature. I don't know if this is the Logan Wolverine. We don't quite necessarily know if that's the case, even though that Wolverine died, or if this just might be another variant. But what did you make of that? Just the weight that character was carrying throughout this trailer, and ultimately what it might mean for the story.
I think, you know, that's what makes Deadpool and Wolverine so interesting, is a lot of people, I think on the facade, would paint them as two completely different characters, but technically they're not. technically Deadpool just used his darkness in a different way than Wolverine did, and made light of it. Wolverine just remains gritty and a kind of somewhat angry guy.
Yeah, you know, different coping mechanisms.
Different coping
right?
mechanisms, yeah. But in a lot of ways, they are very similar tortured souls. And, you know, you kind of talk about how the, of course, with Deadpool comes, you know, a lot of that laughter and a little bit of playfulness. But also Deadpool has always been on kind of serious missions. You know what I mean? Like, even though there's funny stuff happening, the Deadpool movies, it's always like a serious mission. Like, ooh, we got to get this done. Ooh, this needs to get done. There's always some type of gravitas to it. And so it's so interesting now pulling in Wolverine, who can, I think, kind of not necessarily counteract, but kind of go with the seriousness of the mission. But then, on the other hand, counteract Deadpool with all of his wittiness and be like, all right, dude, what's going on here? Like, this is a serious thing. So I love that dynamic. But I also love that they'll be able to play with, you know, that gravity that we need for the MCU. It's, again, this movie, I think, is about to do so much, again, according to this trailer. But I think that's really important, knowing that they have a mission to accomplish, and this trailer saying, yeah, they're definitely out to do something. They're not just two buddies running around the universe, you know. So I think that's important that they conveyed that.
I don't know how many Wolverine variants we'll see in this movie, but it does feel like the vast majority of them are super depressed. They're alcoholics. They are dealing with so much shit and baggage. The first one that we see in this trailer is at the bar, which felt kind of like a callback to X-Men First Class, when a young Xavier and a young Eric, you know, go to recruit him, and he tells him to, you know, fuck off, essentially. And I think that that's a variant that isn't the same one that we see in the more traditional costume. I think that that's another version. But all of them have this weight that they're carrying, because they have a very dark past. Most of the people around them have died over the course of history, just because of, you know, Wolverine's longevity with life. But then I think the one that we primarily are going to spend our time with, he's obviously responsible for something, or at least he considers himself to be responsible for the death of mutants, or maybe the non-existence of mutants, and he's probably the last one left, very similar to what we saw in Logan, because all throughout that movie, it was pretty much hinted at that him and Xavier were the last mutants, and somehow they were responsible for the wiping out of mutants. And we don't really get into the specific details of what exactly happened, but they kind of painted with broad strokes to give you a sense that, yeah, something very catastrophic happened to leave them, you know, sort of in this dystopian post-apocalyptic society where mutants don't exist. So I can't wait to see how that plays out. And as you mentioned, Wade, though there is always that comedy, the first two Deadpool movies have their serious moments. There's definitely moments of actual big emotion, you know, that occur in that movie. So I think they'll continue that as well here. Next thing I want to quickly highlight, these connections to the TVA. We kind of, you know, teased that out in the previous one. We knew that the TVA was going to be a big presence in this movie, and they are not shying away from that in this trailer whatsoever. We see a little bit more with Matthew McFadden. We see more of the timekeepers and the different security guards as a part of the TVA. There's also a quick shot of Eliath, which we know premiered in Loki and is in the void. And there's also the big Ant-Man head that's like a skull base for Cassandra Nova, which we'll get to her in a second. But there's a lot going on here, and we don't quite know exactly how it ties in with the story, but we do know that the TVA deals with timelines, and they deal with pruning individuals out of timelines. I mean, just based off of what you saw, what are your thoughts on what they showed us, and I guess ultimately how that might affect the story moving forward?
Oh, man, I think there's just so much going on. I think the fun thing to recognize is I think this will be a really cool, I think also, I don't know if love letter is the right word, but a good like post Loki adventure. You know what I mean? Because Loki showed us what a lot of those different timelines are supposed to look like, what a lot of those different worlds are supposed to look like. And I think initially, it was hard to tell which direction exactly they were going to go. Like, are Deadpool Wolverine going back to one timeline to do something specific? But now looking at the trailer, it does feel like we're about to hit so many different places, not just where multiple Wolverines are, but like, again, it's like, whoa, Cassandra's Nova here, all of these people are here, how do we get into this situation? So I'm really interested more than anything to see what they're hiding from us. Like you said at the top of it, bro, it's like, this is a story trailer, but there's so much that's like, what are we really, really doing? Like, tell us what we're really, really doing. And they won't show it. And so they keep giving us these little glimpses of the TVA and, again, all of these Easter eggs and characters. But, man, I have no idea where it's going yet. It's really hard for me to tell. So, yeah, I really can't get into the nitty gritty of those things. But, man, I really don't know yet. It's kind of hard for me to put my finger on it. But I know it looks cool. That's all I can say. Like, that big Ant-Man head was like, whoa, what happened here? Like, I need to know what happened here. So, yeah, I can't wait to figure it out.
A part of me feels like, for whatever reason, the TVA is pruning legacy X-Men characters out of their universes, which, you know, I know we have a lot of speculation and rumors of previous X-Men from those other films showing up and potentially playing a part in this story. I wonder if something is happening, if there's some sort of insurgency in the TVA, there's some sort of uprising. Maybe it has to be related to Cassandra Nova to some extent. Maybe she's taken over the TVA and she's causing the different timekeepers to wipe out all these various X-Men timelines, mutant timelines. I don't know, just throwing it out there. But yeah, there's something going on. There's definitely something going on. I mean, even at the end of the trailer, the Doctor Strange portal that they jumped through, you talk about hiding stuff. They clearly wiped out whatever was on the other side. It's just like a massive white void, whatever they jumped through. And they clearly like deleted that out of the trailer so that it doesn't give it away. Do you think that's Strange possibly in the movie, or do you think it's Wong making like his 25th appearance in the MCU at that point?
I don't know. That's kind of hard to tell. It could be Wong. It could be Ned. Hello. No.
Oh my God, not Ned. Yo, we got to retcon that. Him having the sling ring. I don't know about that one.
Remember somebody had a sling ring in Guardians 3? It could be a lot of people now. True. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
It could be a lot of people, and I think that's kind of what makes it cool. It's like, oh, who is it? I think Strange would be cool because, like, oh, finally, like, where people are starting to show up in other people's movies. You know what I'm saying? Plus, Strange, like, went disappearing in some other... We don't know how we're going to get Strange back, so it'd be cool if he was there just to be like, oh, that's where Strange is. But, yeah, there's no telling. I really do want it to be him, though.
Yeah, it would be also, I think, a good move from a storytelling perspective, because Strange has already dealt to a certain extent with incursions, and maybe incursions are playing a big part in this story. And so he knows about that. He knows a little bit about that. And so maybe there's a way to bring him into the story to enlighten them about what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes your kind of, you know, theory that you just came up with Cassandra Nova so cool about the TVA and what's going on purging X-Men, because that's exactly where we leave Ms. Marvel, right? Is Monica Rambeau was literally with some X-Men. Imagine that's the post-credit scene for Deadpool and Wolverine. Is like, they got to pull up on Kelsey Grammer's Beast. You know what I'm saying? Like, some things go down. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's some cool connections that will be made eventually, though.
So let's talk about Cassandra Nova, because that's probably the biggest reveal of this trailer, if we're being honest. We speculated about villain, what that might be. I know Cassandra Nova was circulating as being the villain, but we finally see her in this trailer played by Emma Corrin. And wow, there could be very massive implications for her presence in this film, just because of the fact that she is the brother, technically, of Charles Xavier in the comics. Canonically, they are related. They are twins. And Charles actually, from what I know and what I understand, destroyed her in the womb. And so she had to sort of rebuild her physical exoskeleton, her physical parts, you know, over time and come back and essentially exact revenge on him and the X-Men. And so that's a really, really interesting component to play with and include in the story. We know that Charles is dead in the Logan timeline, but he's alive in other timelines. We saw him in Multiverse of Madness. I don't know. What are your thoughts about Cassandra Nova and just the role that she might play in this story? And is she also the real big villain of the movie? Could it also be somewhat of a red herring that, yes, she's a factor, but there might be a larger threat out there at play?
You know, that's such a good point, because just knowing about Cassandra Nova and, you know, where she comes from, it's like she could be. It's hard for me to say whether she'll remain a villain or not, because there are multiple times where she does replace Charles Xavier in some points. There are moments where we discover that, like, she's like the galactic opposite of Charles Xavier, but that didn't make her necessarily a villain. It just made her like opposite of him. Like in the because they, like you said, they were twins. So it's just a lot there that could be going. But I do like the idea, at least she starts, you know what I mean, as the villain, because I mean, who else more formidable than, again, somebody with these telekinesis powers that we know Charles Xavier had? Now Cassandra walking, like, I'm Professor X walking is scary. I'm sorry. Like, that's why I like, look, that's why they had to keep doing stuff with Jean Grey. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's too good to just be walking around. Let's make her struggle with something over here. Like, she can't do that. And so with a power such as Cassandra Nova being presented to us, I think it's pretty cool to present her that way, especially somebody who can possibly haunt Logan in the ways in which he's already been haunted. Like, uh-oh, what did you let happen? It was Cassandra Nova's fault? Or just maybe she's reminiscent enough of Charles Xavier for him to be like, what is going on here? So I can't wait to see kind of those interactions and what she means for the movie.
Yeah, when, I mean, you know, you have to present a formidable villain that can actually take on a Wade Wilson and a Logan, who were practically invulnerable mutants. You know, they can't really... they can't really have damage inflicted upon him, or at least damage that'll last. You know, they have these recuperating abilities. And so who better than to bring in this villain, quote unquote, than Cassandra Nova, who can get in their heads, who can use the telekinetic powers to her advantage. And it also appears that she probably made the giant Ant-Man helmet her base of operations. Like, that's her headquarters. And maybe she's taken over the void and she's running shit down there. I'm not sure, but all signs point to something that's going to be very, very epic, and clearly they are holding back a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if this trailer was the first 35 minutes, 40 minutes of the movie, and we haven't seen anything else from the other two acts of the film. It feels like that there's just going to be that much. Before we wrap up, any other things that you wanted to call out about the trailer? I think the only other, like, really funny thing, just, you know, another comedic point, was the last joke about the cocaine. I thought that was hilarious. Ryan Reynolds is like, that's the one thing Kevin Feige said we cannot talk about. There's no cocaine references, and they just go down the list of all the different slang for cocaine. It was hilarious. I thought that was a great way to end off the trailer. But any other moments that you wanted to call out or point out from this trailer?
No, man, I think you got it. I think that dog is funny because it is ugly as hell. Oh my God, that dog is ugly. I was like, dang. I was curious if, like, I actually don't know if that dog has made like a comic appearance or anything, but I was like, what is this dog? Why is it here? And why does it look like this? But it's funny because, of course, Deadpool will have a dog that looks exactly like that. The last thing is, like, I'm still trying to understand, like, why we're in certain places and seeing, like, they were in Sakaar. I don't know why they're in Sakaar. Like, why? I just, like...
Yeah, yeah.
That was, like... Yeah, that was, like, the bed that, like, Hulk was in. I was, like, I'm pretty sure that's the same... the same bed. So, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on there. But, that's really it.
Yeah, it feels like maybe similar to Endgame, there's going to be a lot of a lot of hopping around to various mm-hmm. points that we're familiar with and various locations that we've seen in other MCU movies. Also just want to point out fucking Hugh Jackman, just absolutely shredded. Just shredded. Ridiculous that this man gets in that type of, he's 55 years old looking like that. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Got like
that
this vein.
It's ridiculous. Like, he has veins on top of veins in his biceps. I'm like, bro, I didn't even know like you can get veins in that location. You're just, he's otherworldly. That's really why he's one of the greatest castings in comic book movie history. But certainly cannot wait for Deadpool and Wolverine. Of course, that movie will be coming out this July 26th, so we'll be locked in for every step of the way. But with all of that said, let's go ahead and move on and talk about the reason why we're here and get into the latest episode of X-Men 97. Episode 6 just recently premiered. It's entitled Life Death Part 2. So it is sort of continuing a story that kicked off a couple of weeks ago with Life Death Part 1, which was the second half of a sort of two-part episode, really kind of continuing the story threads of where Storm is and her losing her powers and just the journey that she's been on with the character of Forge. So that picks up with that. But then there's also another big story at play in this episode. Before we talk about spoilers, before we get into the nitty gritty of the most recent episode, let's just start off with our general big picture thoughts. What did you think about this latest episode of X-Men 97?
Another tremendous entry, I think, into X-Men 97. They impressed me week to week, man, because episode 5 was so, what the hell just happened? What the hell is going on? That this episode is both somewhat of an exhale, but also it has so much meaning. There's so many things going on in this episode. A lot of good dialogue again, a lot of bars, and some really cool, I think, politicking going on, and some really good social commentary in this episode that I really enjoy. But a lot of cool characters are back that I know that I really enjoy. Also, I really like the way this episode looks. I know we've been talking about the animation for a while, but they got Galactic in this episode, right? And everything is just so colorful and vibrant and no spoilers, but even there's like some water spills and I'm like, is that what water looks like? I was like, what is that? Is that water? So yeah, man, I just gotta continue to commend them for the way the show just looks. It's crazy. This is one of the ones where I sat there and was just like, ooh, this is beautiful. So yeah, another tremendous episode from X-Men 97.
Yeah, I have to really echo most of those sentiments. I enjoyed it quite thoroughly. I think that we needed somewhat of a come down from the previous week's episode, which was absolutely devastating, to of course catch up with characters, but sort of slow down slightly and really kind of focus the story a little bit more, I think in a more focused way. Last week's story really kind of incorporated every mutant that's a part of the show and the larger ramifications. And this does as well, but it's definitely more of a character-driven episode. And I thought that was a great choice. On the Storm side of things, mostly enjoyed that. I do wonder, and this was similar to what we saw in episode 3 with the Jean Grey, Madeline Pryor story. I do wonder if maybe there was an opportunity to extend what was happening in this episode a little bit more. I think that mm-hmm. some of the conclusions we got to happen maybe quicker than I would have liked. And yeah, we could have gone a little bit further with them, because we know in the comics those stories tend to run a lot longer. But mm-hmm. that aside, it was really well executed, and I like that. And I can't really get into the other story without spoiling it, but I thought that stuff, to your point, the Galactic introductions and what they did there, some of the faithful depictions of certain characters, the costumes, yeah, I'm like, oh yeah, this is beautiful. It's a total contrast to what we've seen in the MCU, because a lot of those characters, or at least some of those characters, have been a part of MCU movies before. But overall, a really, really great, fantastic job that I think certainly took two characters, focused on them, had their thematic stories intertwined to a certain extent, and I think paid them off in really satisfying ways, which gets me excited, of course, about the remaining few episodes. But let's go ahead and talk spoilers and get into all of the details of this episode. So if you've not seen episode 6 or any episode of X-Men 97 for that matter, this is your official spoiler warning. Go watch that on Disney Plus and then come back and finish out the rest of our conversation, which means we got to start off with Charles Xavier, because he's back. He's finally here. He has finally made his return to the series. We have been talking about him and obviously wondering what's going on with Charles Xavier. The original animated series sent him away from Earth and he didn't technically die. The top of this series gave us the impression that maybe he is dead. I think there's just been a lot of questions. Deep down, I'm pretty sure we all knew he's not actually dead, mm-hmm. but we just have to figure out what's going on with him and where he's been all this time, because it has been a year since the conclusion of that original animated series. And we find that he is in space, essentially, with the Shi'ar, and he has been a part of this growing empire for the past year, and he has a relationship, a romantic relationship, with Empress Lilandra. And really, the way we start off with this episode is the sister of Lilandra, Deathbird, she launches an attack on the Kree. We get a lot of Kree Shi'ar back and forth, which I thought was really, really entertaining, before we ultimately see that Xavier and Lilandra have become engaged, and he's also walking. He's on his own 2 feet now, because he has this really impressive gold exoskeleton suit of armor that allows him to walk once again. And they're looking to solidify their engagement and their marriage, ultimately, for him to be alongside Lilandra to help rule the Shi'ar and to be a part of their future. So what did you think about just that whole introduction, seeing the Kree a part of this, seeing Deathbird and Lilandra, mm-hmm. and then ultimately seeing where Xavier has been all this time?
One of the things that was crazy was seeing Ronan, like young Ronan, like pre-Power Stone, whatever Ronan this is supposed to be, was like, oh shoot, this is really Ronan the Accuser in this part or time of the universe. Again, I'm kind of in the back of my head saying this is the same timeline as MCU, right? So I'm like, oh, young Ronan. But it's really cool. To see him like in a completely different place, animated. It was just like, oh, shoot, Ronan's here. I thought that was dope. Second, man, I love Deathbird. Oh, my God. Deathbird is about that business. She has like this just energy about her that's just really cool. She's like just very commanding I don't know, just really cool. Like there's a moment she put her heel through the face of Ronan. I was like, is this the type of time that we're on in this episode? Like, my goodness, what is going on here? But yeah, I really like Deathbird. And one more character from that scene I have to call out is Gladiator, because Gladiator is just tight, because it's like Gladiator is literally an homage to Superman, but he exists in Marvel. And it's just really cool to like see everything the way he's presented and the things that he does, but in a Marvel context. It's like different, but similar. I don't know. It's just a really cool homage of a character. His name is literally like Clark. It's like Clark or something crazy. I was like, y'all are funny as hell for
real Gladiator. Creative there.
Real creative there. But yeah, I love seeing them. But man, that introduction was great. To be honest, I did not expect to see Xavier in that way. I don't think anybody did. I knew he was alive, but I just didn't expect. I thought it would take more work to get him, I don't know, back active and functional or whatever we had to do to get him back. It was like, no, he's up here chilling with his bae. What? Trying to become king of the Shi'ar Empire. Like, what? How do we, like, part of me needs, like, an in-between. Like, how do we get here, bro? Like, that's not how we ended. Like, that's not, I don't know how you got here. So part of me needs some explanation as eventually when he does return, he got to tell him what happened, right? Like, there's no way he's not going to tell him what happened. So he has to tell him what happened. But, man, I didn't expect that. I thought it was a really cool introduction to the episode. Great to see these characters. And Charles, again, that visual of him walking was like, whoa. What is going on here? Like, this dude has a suit of armor on. It's crazy. But yeah, I really liked coming to Xavier in such a crazy way. Again, I think they knew a lot of us would come in like, oh, Xavier is probably somewhere crazy. And they're like, no, he's just up here kind of chilling. So I kind of like that they did that.
Yeah, let me start off with Xavier. When I saw him pop up walking, just full stop, so confident, so commanding, I'm like, oh, bro, you've been living great for the past year. You've been living your best fucking life. No wonder you haven't returned to Earth. Thanks. It actually got me thinking about what we pretty much just saw with Invincible and Omni-Man, and the fact that, spoilers if you've not seen Invincible, but in the first half of it, when Mark goes out to this intergalactic planet and he sees his father has just moved on. He started this whole new life, and he's the king and ruler of empire. Xavier's living the exact same way, and I'm like, damn, bro, you have definitely moved on pretty quickly here. It's crazy what a year can do to a person, because he's living large, and I love that form, obviously. He looked great, and it was just like a great way to just, I think, throw us off our guard and really get us, starting off with this episode in a really, really unexpected way. And I just want to call out Deathbird, who kind of stole the episode for me.
Yes.
I mean,
Team Bill Burr.
I love, in a guilty way, I love how racist they made her. She is so terrible. She is so bad. She calls, like, Charles's universe a Milky Way ghetto at one point. Mm-hmm. She says, how dare you want to mix your blood with your inferior freak fluids? I'm like, oh, she's just dropping bars left and right on these people. And so I just love that they committed to her characterization and made her a really commanding force who just wasn't with the shit. She was not with Charles being a part of their empire. And so much so that she offered up a really, really challenging and sacrificial way for him to prove his loyalty to the Shi'ar, which kind of brings us to the next point in the fact that she invokes, you know, this ritual, Imdasha, I think it's called. She invokes this ritual, essentially, which will require him to erase all of his memories of Earth, because they just don't like the fact that he's from Earth. They don't like that he's a Terran. And so she invokes this rite of Imdasha, basically challenging him to purge all of his memories of Earth, but also to purge his memories of the X-Men, which clearly that's the one piece of it that bothers him. It's not so much the Earth aspect. I think it's definitely his relationship to the X-Men, where she's like, yeah, you got to really go all the way, because we can't accept you if you're not willing to fully commit. And overall, this creates this, I think, a really challenging dynamic for Charles and a choice that he has to make. Of course, Lilandra, who is battling her sister, but also wanting this to happen, wanting this relationship and this marriage to be consummated to a certain extent. So how did you feel about that conflict for Charles? The fact that he was going to have to completely just negate everything that's happened, his entire past, in order to possibly create a better future for the Shi'ar Empire.
I love that conflict. But I know deep down, we know Charles, man, he could not, as the leader of the X-Men, as the creator of the X-Men, he could not let them go. He couldn't let them go. But again, it's such a crazy conflict, though, because it's almost like choosing between happiness and continued struggles, right? And that's kind of what Lilandra's trying to tell him. Like, Lilandra's like, hey, on Earth, you literally fought on Earth to be tolerated, just to be tolerated. Like, why would you not let that go? And I think that's such a crazy way, or interesting way, to think about it, because that's so true, right? Especially in a lot of ways, that's been the Black experience, right? For a lot of us, it's like that, and that's a lot of outlooks that people have on the Black American experience in particular. Is like, y'all over there just trying to be tolerated, y'all need to come back to Africa. That's kind of, in some ways, what Lilandra's trying to say. Like, no, it's okay, just come be peaceful, come live your life, they'll be okay. And in fact, they even go on to make a point. Lilandra's like, you taught them well, like, it's okay. But Xavier's like, they might have more to learn. Like, I might have a little bit more to teach them before I can.
A lot more to learn.
A lot more to learn before I can go. You know what I'm saying? And so I really like, I love both of their points, because technically Lilandra's not making bad points either. She's like, live in peace. Like, you've done what you could. And sometimes the work is not yet finished. And that's what Xavier's trying to say. So I just really like that dynamic and what they're saying back and forth, because in a lot of ways, they're both technically right. But I love the resolve that Charles has and the love that he has for his X-Men. I think that's so important. And not only that, but him wanting to remember the X-Men, not just the X-Men, but he says, I have a good friend named Magnus who is on Earth right now. And I'm like, dang, man, that's so crazy that after all these years, both what Magneto had set out to do, now after Xavier does, he takes the helm. Charles is like, I got this good friend, man. And yeah, I don't want to forget about him either. It's so crazy after all these quarrels that they both kind of always will remember each other as best friends in that kind of loving way. It's just a really cool, I think, thing to think about, no matter how much they've been through.
Yeah, I mean, him ultimately refusing to go through with the rite and the challenge just goes to show that his X-Men have been on his mind and on his heart this entire time, despite what it looks like, despite the fact that it looks like he's having this new great life and this great future and could potentially rule an empire and hopefully improve it and have an era of peacetime to a certain extent. He knows deep down, as you said, where his heart is and where it ultimately lies, and the fact that he's not gotten over the fact that he has been away for so long, and that they probably need him more than ever now at this point, based off of what we saw last week, which we certainly know to be true. And I love how thematically his journey in this episode is very much intertwined with what we see with Storm later in the episode. The fact that both of these characters have to sort of turn away from their present circumstances in order to embrace their past. You know, where they are currently it could define them, and it could certainly lead them to a certain future if they choose to go down that path. But they both have to remember these things and confront certain fears, I think, as well. Confront certain fears that they've dealt with, and ultimately go back to the past in order to rectify what's still out there, and ultimately reach a conclusion and try to come to terms with who they really are deep down underneath that, because they've sort of been living in somewhat false realities for themselves. And I just love that they take us on that journey, especially with Charles, because we haven't gotten that time with him thus far up until this point. But as I mentioned, he does turn down the challenge, and he gets real old school with everybody. I mean, he uses his telekinetic powers and projection powers to basically set up a classroom for the Shi'ar and teach them a lesson. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to take y'all to school real quick. I'm going to show you how we do it down at my school on Earth. And it was probably the most enjoyable part of the episode for me, because we see him throw back on the classic suit that we know him to wear in the animated series. But he's still standing. You know, we get to see him as like a full standing present teacher in this moment. And they literally, you know, conjure up a classroom, and he just has a conversation with the Shi'ar about their relationships and the meaning of Earth and all these different things that are just really important to him, before ultimately it's interrupted by this really horrific vision of Gambit, who we know, you know, passed away in the previous episode. So how did you feel about just that whole sequence that which ultimately motivated Charles to make the decision that he made to go back to Earth and to be very confident in that decision and to tell Alondra, my X-Men need me. I gotta bounce. I can't be here. They need me more now than they ever have.
What a cool moment. I think just recognizing him, Charles himself, this past year, he hasn't been a teacher. And that's why I love him in that moment. He's like, let me do the thing I know I'm good at. Like, what have I been doing this whole time? They're not understanding what I'm saying. And part of it's because they won't sit down and listen. So let me put them in a place where they're forced to sit down and listen to what I'm saying to them. And I love this because, again, there's so much social commentary here of, you may know your customs to be this way, but it's really the honesty of the way your people are built. It's really the honesty of your civilization that determines how successful you will be moving forward. Yo, you better speak on it, Charles Xavier. It was crazy. He was like, you know, talking about cutting people at the knees. It was just crazy. It was just a lot of really good teaching moments. And what I also love about it is the council was low-key listening. Deathbird was listening, right? He's like, the merits, he threw an apple in our mouth, whatever. But the council was like, one dude raised his hand. I was like, wait a second, did he raise his hand to ask a question? I said, he really got these people in school right now. And I love that in that moment, again, it happened really fast, right? But even in that moment, they're like, what if people don't adopt these ideals? What if they call them crazy? What if they, and he's like, shoot, you better, it's better than not doing it at all. You know what I mean? So I think it's really cool that they decided to go down that line. But it's also crazy that Charles is like, I think so willing, not necessarily so willing, but the wrestle to have to give up Lalandra after they was just talking crazy, you know what I'm saying? Like, talking about he was a pet and she was like bark later. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but it's crazy that Charles is ready to leave this, you know what I mean? Because I think there would be a sense of peace being with her. But I think, again, knowing about teaching is what he loves to do, and I think you really can't stop him from not only teaching but from caring from his kids. And so yeah, I love that whole thing, and I love how he was able to break it down to get the Shi'ar to understand, like, they were actually listening, and I really like that.
Yeah, it's also kind of crazy how patient this man is, the fact that he's willing to have a conversation, because Deathbird was spewing all sorts of shit at him, talking that shit to him, and it's like, bro, watch who you talking to right now, don't forget who I am. And he still was willing to have that conversation. And, you know, that ties into the entire approach of Magneto and Charles and their differences and how they approach relationships with other beings and species. I mean, Charles is always willing to be that person to give another chance and to see who a person really is, you know, dig a little bit deeper. And I love that they stuck to that characterization of him, because what better way than to just, like, pause everything, let's calm down, let's have a seat, and let's just talk. Like, we don't have to deal with all of this background noise, because ultimately we can see that the rest of the Shi'ar Empire, they clearly feel a way about it, and if we let all of those voices get into this conversation, nothing productive can come from that. But if we just sit here and just talk through these things, and I can provide you my point of view, and I can still listen at the same time, then we might reach a better conclusion. And it doesn't totally go that way. Things kind of get cut off before they can really reach a resolution, but the point point is made that he's leaving regardless of what's all happened, because it's a dire situation. And we see and we know that the Genosha incident requires his attention immediately and he has to bounce. Let's talk about the other part of this episode, though, and that's Storm and her evolution and where she ultimately ended up in this episode. Again, as I mentioned in the non-spoiler section, this is a continuation of Life Death Part 1, which started a couple of weeks ago, which kind of continued the journey of Storm trying to gain her powers back. But we also see her here dealing with her present situation and ultimately having to embrace her fears and overcoming them in order to get her powers back. And I don't know if it's a ton to say about this, but really most of this segment of the episode kind of focuses on this conversation that Storm has with the adversary, which is like this demon bird, which continues to taunt Storm over and over and over again. It's just this thing that's in her ear, and Forge, who is injured and requires the attention of Storm, is also trying to do things to get her to embrace her fears to overcome her present situation. And they basically construct the scenario where her biggest fear has been claustrophobia, in addition to losing her powers, of course, but being in very tight, constricted spaces. And they go to this cave, she's cornered by adversary, and she has to confront that directly. And ultimately, we see her go through this trial in order to get her powers back. So how did you feel about just that whole setup? The fact that, you know, we kind of get directly into it. We see that Storm is now in a place where she just goes in it head on. She doesn't run away from anything anymore. And she just kind of directly addresses the situation at hand to become her full self once again after losing her powers all those weeks ago.
Yeah, man. I think this is, you know, somewhat of a parable or a story that or a lesson even. That happens sometimes. We lose ourselves. And a lot of times it's because we're listening to the worst parts of our subconscious and the people around us and our environment. And, you know, there's that moment where Storm, you know, she even goes like, dang, I forgot what she said. I lost it. Anyways, she's just been, I think, in this spot for so long that now she has this demon in her ear, and it's like, I love how she's like, I'm never gonna feel defeated to you. Like, you can keep yelling in my ear all that you want, but I'm not gonna give into it. And the adversary is like, I mean, what are you saying to me right now? Like, look at Forge right now, as he's like dying in the bed. But he's like, Forge made his bed, let him die in it. Storm is not having it, because as an X-Man, she believes that no matter what, everybody has the right to life, right? Everybody has the right to live. And I just think there's a lot of really cool lessons in there, again, about a lot of self-confidence and how you talk to yourself. Because the crazy thing about it is when she regains her powers, it is in the worst place possible for her. It's not just some, you know, anything crazy. It's literally in the midst of her biggest fear of being claustrophobic, in which she begins to realize who she is again and get her power back. Literally back against the wall is when she starts to get her power back. So I just thought that was a really cool moment. True, even really cool line, you know, let them thunder, for I am lightning. I was like, bet. I love this. And of course, they give her beautiful original costume back. Thank God. Listen, I'm sorry if you liked it. Thank God the Mohawk is gone. I've never been a Storm Mohawk fan. Even the shirt I have on right now, no Mohawk. No Mohawk. I have a Storm shirt on, no Mohawk. I don't know what it is. It's not been my Storm that I like to see. So they gave her a full head of hair back. I love it. She looks like a goddess. I just think it's a really cool kind of life lesson that they were trying to give us with Storm and Adversary and Forge. I thought all of that was really dope.
Yeah, the full head of hair was definitely a look. It hits different. But yeah, this segment of the episode, it was really good, well executed, and of course I liked, you know, sort of the allegories that it makes to our own personal experience and things that we deal with on a daily basis. And a lot of this does, you know, directly pull from the life death story in the comics as well. And it was good. I thought the good and the moment at the end, it really pays off in a great way. And I love the flying sequence, which, you know, the creators talked about the fact that this was very influenced by Man of Steel. And when he learns how to fly in that movie, which if you look at the sequence, it's like, oh yeah, they actually do like one for one shots, like when she's flying over the water. Yep. The first person shot of her flying with her arms out. All of that is directly lifted from Man of Steel. And I love that. You know, that's the one Zack Snyder comment that I'll give in this episode, because it's coming few and far in between lately with these Netflix movies. But anyway, it was overall really, really well done. This is the one element of this entire series that I do wish they spent a little bit more time on, just because, again, I would have probably have liked to seen her be without her powers a little bit longer. I understand she also has to pull up on Genosha. Shit is, it's at its worst, and she got to go. And we see at the end of the episode, she sees the massacre. She sees all of the death and destruction. So just based on the placement of things, it makes sense that she'll get it back now so that she can aid in the fight. But it's one of those elements where it's like, yeah, this did run a little bit longer in the comics, so maybe they could have done a little bit more with it. But I know that they have certain time constraints. It's a 10-episode season. There's only so much room that you can play with. But ultimately, it was really satisfying to see her get her powers back with that original costume. It looked great. It was really fantastic. And at the end of this episode, basically all roads lead back to Mr. Sinister. We essentially find out that he's the one that's been pulling the strings the entire time. He was the one responsible for the attack in Genosha. He basically used Bolivar Trask in order to create certain DNA to take over Master Mold that would launch this attack. There's Cable implications, of course, that we still have to sort of figure out and rectify in a future episode since he was sent back to the future. But how did you feel about Mr. Sinister and his return there? We know he had a huge presence in episode 3. I think we all safely assumed that he was going to play a larger role in the season. It was going to be coming back in some form or fashion. But how did you feel about that reveal and ultimately what it might mean for the next few episodes?
Oh, just a good reveal. I think we talked about it. I think that's what we expected, you know, after talking about episode 5, that like, yeah, Mr. Sinister probably is behind this. He really is like just an unkillable dude, man. He's just like, this dude is ridiculous. Like Mr. Sinister is always going to come back. But again, I love using Mr. Sinister to again, just show people how crazy this X-Men villain can be. And I love that he's such a big villain. I was like, we can't just see him one time in this random Madeline Pryor episode. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's too big of a villain to be doing that. So I love they brought him back. I love that they made sure that we knew who it was, because now we don't have to go through it next episode. Like, oh, who did this thing? Let's do an investigation. It's like, nah, we know who it is. So ready to get to the nitty gritty when that next episode rolls around, man. But yeah, Mr. Sinister is crazy. And yeah, I'm interested to see how, what they go by the end of the season, if they pack them up, you know what I mean? But I think Mr. Sinister ain't going nowhere for a long time.
Yeah. He kind of feels like he has to stay around. Like, you don't want to get rid of such, he's such a great villain, that they've done tremendous stuff within the original series. But I got a feeling that the team at Marvel Studios, they're like, no, we want to really play with this character a lot, cause we haven't gotten our hands on him up until this series. And so a part of me had thought, and it's interesting that this is all happening right now with the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, but a part of me had thought that this would somehow maybe lead to Cassandra Nova in this first season of X-Men 97. I mean, they haven't set it up entirely. Yeah. It could still happen, but I thought that maybe she was possibly involved in the attack and that she might have been somewhat responsible. But I kind of still feel like that there might be something there with Cassandra Nova and that they might somehow circle back to that character. Maybe it's like an end of season tag, because we know that they're developing seasons 2 and 3 right now. And so we know that there's going to be more episodes. But ultimately, Mr. Sinister, he's a great villain to go with, just because of that foundational work that was done all those years ago that can now just be translated and carried forth. And of course, all the ties with Jean Grey, Cyclops. I mean, there's just a lot of threads that have to be ultimately solved in these final 4 episodes. But before we wrap up here, any other, you know, sort of call outs or things that you wanted to point out from this episode, or just hopes and expectations for the next few episodes that we get? We've heard from the creators that apparently episodes 8 through 10 are going to be crazy. We thought 5 was something. Apparently 8 through 10 are going to rock our world. So we still got a couple of weeks before that. We got to get to 7. But any hopes or expectations, or just other things you want to call out?
I did notice at the opening of this episode, Nightcrawler's not included. I don't think he was included before. I thought that was cool.
Right.
So I noticed that. I was like, oh shoot, there we go, my boy, he has arrived. I love to see him. That means he'll be a bigger part in the episodes that happen after this. But hopes and expectations, man, if it's anything like episode 5, I'm ready. I think that was some really cool writing. I don't need all necessarily all the trauma, but the action, I love how actiony it was. although you didn't always have to see the big action that was happening outside, you could feel it. And that's what I'm excited about, I think, in this show, is they really did create an environment for X-Men to live in. They created a world for X-Men to live in that I can feel. And everyone is doing such good voice acting, too. I want to shout out them. It's funny, like, there was that tweet that, like, everyone, they're doing it right because Storm still sounds like Angela Bassett and Rogue still sounds like Dolly Parton. And like, it's like, oh yeah, you're right. We're doing great, guys. So I'm pretty excited for all those things as well. But yeah, man, that's it. I'm just excited for more crazy, nerdy X-Men stuff. I can't wait to get into it. And I can't wait to get into some new characters too. I have a feeling that we're going to start pulling in again some of those other characters. Kind of what we did with episode 5 on Genosha. That was like, oh shoot, there goes Banshee and there goes Dazzler. I'm really excited to see some more of them. Again, I need my boy Bobby Drake to pull up. That's who I need. I need Iceman to pull up. That's my boy. So we'll see if he pops up. But other than that, man, I'm just ready for the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the big thing that I can't wait to see Xavier coming back to Earth and dealing with that and dealing with, you know, the X-Men and the fact that he left them in the hands of Magneto. And I know some of them are going to have a problem with that. Like, you did what, bro? Why in your right mind did you ever think that was okay? Probably Cyclops is going to be coming with a particular type of energy at Xavier when he returns. Or they could just be so happy and overjoyed to see him, knowing that they need him at this point, that you know, they'll put aside any petty differences and stick to the task at hand. But of course, all the soap opera elements, can't wait to see that back. Can't wait to see how the relationships and the love triangles continue to unfold and evolve. Like, there's so much sexual tension and so much stuff going on. Everybody is so frustrated and dealing with all the drama. I'm very excited to get the main primary cast back, because we went without them this week. It was really just about Xavier and Storm, very focused, isolated adventures. So I'm excited to get back to the main cast when we get to the next few episodes. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on episode 6 of X-Men 97. If you've checked this out on Disney Plus, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's going to do it for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you once again for tuning into another podcast. We'll be back later this week with another episode. We'll be talking about a couple of new movies, including Abigail and the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. We also got some news to get to. And as usual, we will be back next week to talk about the latest episode, episode 7 of X-Men 97. So definitely be on the lookout for all of that future content coming your way. Plenty to look forward to. But until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Nerds of Mischief collection at twoblacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy,
and we out, y'all. Peace.